Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 18th of September, 2020, and we're looking at a very interesting session yesterday where we saw the NASDAQ 100 trying those lows for the cycle just below 11,000. You can barely see on the chart, for example, on our slide one today, that we actually did touch nominal new lows in this post-FOMC, temper tantrum, or whatever you want to call it. There's no real, I think, narrative around this. And we bounced, but the bounce hasn't been sort of sufficiently large to suggest that we're not still potentially in danger of looking lower. The S&P didn't quite make it as low in terms of relative to the recent lows. So the broader market, a little bit less affected than the high sort of higher beta tech stocks. Peter, anything else you want to add just to the general observation on stocks? And also, how's Europe dealing with things coming into this morning?
Yeah, so the big news is actually the Chinese equity market, which is really up more than 2% here in the Asia session. So that's helping a little bit, creating tailwind both for the NASDAQ, S&P 500, and European equity futures. But the price action yesterday in NASDAQ provides a lot of evidence that we now have an established trading range between just south of 11,000 to 11,500-ish in the NASDAQ, just as we have established a pretty firm trading range in Europe, although the 3,300 level in the Eurostoxx 50 is now, I think, being locally the support level here. So are we getting more and more squeezed into the upper half of the longer-term trading range, which was from 3,200 to 3,400 in the Eurostoxx 50? And I still think that we could get a pop higher in European equities. I think the missing piece here in the equation, if we can get the COVID-19 outbreak under control, especially in Spain, France, and the UK. So I think it's what the market is really waiting for. But I think round it off, the price action in NASDAQ yesterday was very much again at odds and divergent with what we saw in Europe. So again, a lot of the things seems to be quite isolated to the European market, to the US market, also as it was on the upside when the NASDAQ and S&P 500 just continued to climb, where Europe was just standing still.
Yeah, and we talked about this, some of the data coming in yesterday, for example, high frequency data of interest being that jobless claims data point. Saw it yesterday, and then again, another big drop in the continuing claims, which is good news, and we dropped the numbers revised, but it was on the order of 600,000 to 700,000 jobs. The initial claims still at that elevated level, around 800,000, and we had an exchange yesterday, Peter, about the U.S. continuing claims, and I was just trying to play around with this data point a little bit. It looks so impressive, the decline, the V-shaped decline we've seen in continuing claims on a linear chart, and I put that up on slide two, and that you can see that in blue. And then I put it up on using a log axis on the same chart, same data, just two different axes, one log and one linear, the log being the black numbers. And what, I don't know if there's really any purpose here, except just to show that the log, in log terms, we still have a significant way to fall if we have an exponential fade function. You can kind of see that in the last cycle in 2009, you saw a really strong initial a resurgence in employment, and then the function sort of, you know, it gets to be a much shallower slope. So I think that would be the concern, that we don't continue that blue V-shaped, which if you start to, you know, try to project that forward, it suggests we're going to be back to normal within a year. But if it becomes more of an exponential fade function, that's we're going to be multiple years into the before the job market can improve back to something resembling where it was perhaps halfway through the cycle between 2009 and the low in the unemployment rate in 2019.
And I think in that also that sense, John, and also just briefly going back to the NASDAQ, one comment on gold. I know a lot of investors are very much focusing on it. It's not doing a great deal right now. We are stuck in this $100 range between 1900 and 2000. What we did see yesterday was, or has seen for the past few days, is gold has really become almost behaving more like a risky asset, because it's almost been in lockstep with the intraday performance in the stock markets. And the same thing happened yesterday. When NASDAQ briefly broke below 11,000, gold broke below some local support. There was a massive amount of volume going through, only to recover back above when the stocks rallied. And that basically led to some short covering into the end of the day. So we are right now stuck in this almost mid-range, 1950 something this morning, and the market is really in need of a spark, which we haven't really got right now. But I think in the short term, very much keep an eye on the developments in the stock market, because it seems to be where the inspiration is coming from.
Yeah, and that to me is pretty pathetic, if you don't mind me saying. If gold, this big story about gold, and we're supposed to be heading into this asset because of the fear of long-term negative real rates and so on, and gold is simply bobbing up and down on liquidity concerns and tech stocks. It just feels like it's a really passive market and really lacking inspiration, at least locally here.
It does, and also we haven't really seen much action on the inflation front recently. We've seen a small easing off of some of the break-evens, so that's obviously been a bit of a drag on gold. But we have to remember that probably something like 60-70% of all the trading in gold is algo-driven. So basically, machines are constantly looking for correlations, and right now they latched onto a correlation with stocks, and that's basically what's probably creating some of this intraday volatility.
Yes. So in other words, what we need to look for is something where those algos get broken.
Exactly.
And then you'll see that's an information impulse that we can then maybe start to take a fundamental view on what's going on.
Exactly. And
once the algos are broken. Well, I hate algos, by the way, as an analyst, because I'm not using them in my day-to-day, but they're so important for establishing local action.
Unfortunately, they are,
And then on the dollar front, if we look at slide 3, euro dollar, it really interesting to see the dollar just unable to sort of continue its the bid that materialized after the FOMC. And, often we've talked about the risk correlation, risky asset correlation with the dollar being the flip side of risky assets. And that not really in evidence. I mean, you saw the euro dollar melting all the way down below that support line locally, very locally at 117.50, and then retracing all the way back to 118.50. Locally, it looks like a bullish reversal, but we are stuck in a very choppy and persistent range. So we're going to need to see it proving itself into at least a close above 119 to sort of notch interest higher for a look at that 120 high and beyond. Peter, I'll get back to you on your single stock stories that I think are really interesting today. I just wanted to also mention the other currency really of interest yesterday was sterling, where we saw the Bank of England making it more clear that they're preparing for negative rates, or at least preparing to be able to implement them if they are needed. And that was the message from the headline yesterday, that they're talking with regulators about the practical implementation of negative interest rate policy, even though they're not necessarily hinting that they're about to pull the trigger. And I think really the more important thing here is Brexit and determining sterling's exchange rate rather than negative interest rates per se. What I mean by that is, and I had to clarify this to a journalist I was talking about yesterday, is that negative interest rates are not necessarily that negative for sterling if it's in the context of we have a second wave of COVID concerns and these are affecting the outlook everywhere, including in Europe, et cetera, versus Bank of England doing negative interest rates because of the specific risks to the UK economy, because it looks like we're headed towards a hard Brexit. So that's the point there. And as well, you have conflicting news. So that negative interest rate headline brought the interest rate expectations lower about 5 basis points out for 2 years. So we're pricing in a slightly negative rate already into early 2021. We saw some positive headlines on Brexit talks, informal so-called Brexit talks, a big change of sentiment from what we saw previously. So we have really conflicting news here from Sterling, the UK calling these talks useful, and von der Leyen making positive comments that she's convinced that a deal can be done. So that is definitely a change between very sterling positive. The worry here is the negative rates. And then on the in the COVID headlines, we're seeing that the UK is talking about, or at least being advised from, I think, health officials that a second lockdown may be needed. And this is just not what the UK economy needs or sterling. So headlines flying all over the place. I think the levels to look at are just above 0.90 in euro sterling. And then on slide 7, you can see a cable or sterling versus the dollar, that 130 line, an obvious focus. And you see yesterday's interesting bar where the sell-off, much like euro dollar, the big sell-off that developed on the negative rates headline was completely erased back into the close. So sterling seems to be very twitchy here to inputs, and we'll be watching that closely. But Peter, let's get back to we got another more IPO news. We had Snowflake, of course, this week, that Zany IPO. It settled a bit lower yesterday. What's the next one on the block here?
The next one on the block is Unity, previously called Unity Technologies. It's also been called Unity Software. It depends. They have a lot of different companies. But we wrote a research note, an IPO preview on Unity yesterday, which you can read on analysis.sec. So, and the latest announced pricing range or price IPO price range was $44 to $48, and that was already increased almost $10 from the initial price range. And we alluded to in our preview that we would not be surprised if they set the IPO price at $50 per share because of that very strong demand for Snowflake shares. And rightly so, they priced it even above and at 52, causing the market value to go up to $12.4 billion. Dollars, and it translates into a price to sales ratio of around 16 ish on 756 million in revenue expected for this year. I've put in some different graphics here on slide 4. So it's basically a gaming engine development platform. It operates two different solutions, a create and an operate solution. So the create solution is more like a subscription model. You get access to all their tools. It's it makes gaming development much easier. You can do it as a sole developer. There's also a free model in there. And then you have the operate solution, which is the majority of their revenue, which is basically a revenue sharing model, and then they have small partnerships. And the key thing you're buying into here at Unity is obviously you're betting on gaming to continue. It's definitely their absolute largest segment in terms of revenue, but they're trying to branch out their technology to other industries like automotive, architecture, engineering, etc., where 3D rendering and graphics, and also do that in real time, is getting more and more important. Also for manufacturing planning, if you want to build a factory, you can actually simulate the entire factory production flow in a type of software like Unity. So I think there will be a lot of demand for the shares for Unity, and it starts trading today with the ticker code U on the New York Stock Exchange. So that's a very cool ticker code to get
a single letter.
I think so it's
going to trade at least $100 today. That's what you're telling me, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just want to highlight one more interesting fact about Unity. They are actually spending 47% of their revenue on R&D. That's one of the highest ratios I've probably come around as an equity guy in the last 10 years. And there are increasing evidence in academia studies that R&D development cost is actually something that is really underappreciated by the market. It's underpriced. So that might be, if they can penetrate other industries, at least I think it could become an interesting company in longer term. So let's see what happens with Unity. And the other single story I want to point out is actually here in Europe, in early trading, Apollo Global Management, this big private equity company, have previously done very successful transactions in the plastics industry, and they now rumored to acquire German plastic maker Covesco. It was up 10% in pre-market trading. I don't have a live price right now how the market is pricing Covesco, but if you look at that small insert here on slide 5, you can see that Covesco has done horrible in the past 3 years. They've gone from a almost 24% operating margin to only 11% in the last 12 months. And as a result, the share price, as you can also see on that price chart there, have collapsed. It's a very interesting story for Apollo Tego Covesco. I think it's given it's a turnaround case. So if you're trading Europe, that's probably where the action is today.
All right, and then in the commodity space, Ola, we have energy, the two main energy sources going in very opposite directions. Oil is continuing to rise, and then natural gas collapsing. What's up here?
Well, we had a very interesting day in the oil market yesterday, especially that was delivered by the Saudi oil minister. We had the OPEC Plus meeting, which concluded yesterday with a press conference, and he was very, very lively. two of the takes was basically he threatened the laggards, and considering that he had the minister for UAE sitting next to him, who produced by more than 500,000 barrels more than they agreed to last month, clearly the anger was there to be seen. And also he really went railing against short sellers, basically saying he would be making life hellish for them. So really trying to verbally support the oil price, and he succeeded. I wonder if the next thing is going to threaten motorists to get back in their cars as the next mean of getting prices higher. But this is all very well, but at the end of the day, it's all driven by demand. And as long as demand is flagging a little bit as it is right now because of the rising COVID cases and less demand, then obviously the upside, I think, is still relatively limited. So I think from having traded around 45 for a while, I think we are probably more in the low 40s now for the foreseeable future. But it did the trick initially, just to help send the market higher. And then you mentioned natural gas. We've seen an utter collapse over the past couple of days here. The industrial demand is very weak. I've shown that on slide 10. Obviously, it's just been hidden behind a sign there. But it is weak for this time of year due to the aftermath of these hurricanes. I think the last one was Sally, which basically has reduced industrial demand. And that basically led to a bigger than expected weekly jump in inventory. So as you can see on the chart, we have collapsed all the way down to 193. That's actually both an important Fibo level, and it's also the 200-day moving average. So let's see what it does from here, but potentially we have found some support here. And I think just finally, I just also put in slide 9, that's just for your own perusal, just to give an idea about a relatively strong week for commodities following the recent profit taking. The grain market has really still got very strong momentum, soybeans racing ahead, and oil and fuel, as I mentioned, has jumped higher. And finally, just mentioned copper, which is making new highs this morning based on what's happening in China, as Peter mentioned earlier.
All right, we have a couple things on the calendar today worth noting. The Russian key rate announcement, they're not expected to change this time around. The ruble has been quite weak given what we've seen in other markets and what we're seeing in a lot of EM currencies lately. The concern there around sanctions, the latest headlines have been that reports that they found the poisoning agent to Novichok on some water bottle that Navalny was using in some German military lab, supposedly finding that. So that's the headline there. We'll be tracking that story. I think there's still a huge cloud of uncertainty around Russia and Belarus and sanctions. That's just a background issue for anybody interested in Russian assets and the ruble. A couple of Canadian numbers as well. The first University of Michigan confidence number. Again, these have been rather poor of late out of the U.S. The best correlations you have there are with the labor market, rather than anything else. And I'd like to see some direction there for this first number for September. And then next week is just chock full of central bank meetings, especially interesting, I think, for new signals. Could be Sweden, but especially New Zealand, the RBNZ, as we're seeing the Kiwi rather strong of late. And I know they have a street cred as decent currency warriors, this RBNZ crew. So interesting to see what they come up with next, if that Kiwi is still strong into that meeting. We have the Fed Chair Powell before a House and Senate next week. Turkey, which is one of the lone central banks out there, hiking rates because of the concerns about their currency and flight out of the currency because of negative interest rates, negative real rates. So that'll be an interesting one as well, as we've seen new lows for Turkish lira when the backdrop has otherwise been very supportive for risky assets, at least risky EM. So that's an interesting one as well. But for now, have a great weekend out there. Stay careful, and we'll see you on the other side of the weekend on Monday with the next Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.